Now Kroger. Oh, Kroger got the right hand free.
He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate. And down goes Nyland, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurt.
It's old time hockey.
Enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's the biscuit. It's the biscuit.
Damn it! That goal regulation size of what?
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. There's a country will stop working on some Batman's fucking can.
Hi, everybody. It's the biscuit podcast.
Hey, you want to go? Yeah, okay. Good luck, man.
All right, Biscuit Babies. Today I'm joined by Andy Picaro, stand-up comedian extraordinaire, co-host of the Unhealthy Scratch podcast, and huge hockey fan. We're not here to really necessarily talk playoff hockey or, you know, game sevens or how the format's set up. We're here to celebrate a man who was big for any fan of hockey, especially the ones growing up in the 90s. Who just retired this year and sadly kind of went by the wayside. He wasn't celebrated as much as I'd like to see him. And maybe it's because everyone thought he retired 10 years ago. But that man is Jaromír Jágr. How we doing, Andy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. Yeah, there's something to be said for going out on top. And I think Iginla had kind of the same thing happen to him. Where, I mean, you know, Iginla, I don't think played as well as Jágr in the last years of his career. But I don't know, you stick around a little too long and, you know, it kind of becomes a novelty instead of how great a player you are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still wouldn't count him out.
You think he's coming back?
I don't think so, but it would be so not surprising if he did.
What I would have liked to seen is somehow if, you know, I don't know if there's still bad blood there from when he signed with that other team in Pennsylvania. If Mario would have, you know, tossed him a bone and put him on, and he could skate on the fourth line and fucking, you know, get in for one more and come up top.
You know, just the way Sullivan coaches and the way this regime is, it's just there's no let's do something that's cute.
Yeah.
They're all, I think the blood was a little bit too bad. You really don't hear of Jágr and Lemieux conversing. You don't see very many pictures of them. I'm not sure. I mean, Lemieux is such a buttoned-up, quiet guy that you don't really know what happens with that. I'm not sure. I don't think that. I think the blood never really stopped settled for that much. I think his number will be retired.
Do you?
Oh yeah, for sure.
They almost have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to. I mean, I'm saying that hoping that they retire it, but I can't imagine they wouldn't. But you know, who knows? Like I said, there's a story there. I hope one of them writes a book someday.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me if Jágr gets into the book game, because he's going to start gambling away his money here again pretty soon.
Well, he wrote one in the late 90s that was all about the way he trains and stuff, so yeah, I do think Jágr will have a book coming out.
That's right. Lucas Sedlak, Columbus Blue Jacket, so that's like his Bible, is that Jaromír Jágr book. That's like, you know, get up.
Oh, it's a great book.
I've never read it.
Yeah, I mean, just the how hard he worked as a kid on the farm, and he became so strong by literally like moving barrels of hay for like 7 hours a day from age 12 on. Like he was just a farm boy. It was, you know, built ridiculous.
That's a joke we have around here. It's pretty rural, but you'll see like the new age hipsters wear their Carhartt hats, and I'm like, man, if you've never baled hay, you got to take that fucking hat off, bud.
Yeah, I know. The Carhartt hat is for dudes with huge shoulders.
Right?
You got to have big shoulders for that. Yeah.
His grandpa left it to him or some shit like that. Well, this fucking guy, though, man, easily the best European to ever play in the NHL. Goes down.
Totally. I would agree with that.
I would say for sure. Goes down as one of the 100 greatest players, even in the NHL's eyes. Two-time Cup champion for your Pittsburgh Penguins. What's he end up second most points in league history?
Did he? I mean, I know he eclipsed. I believe he's third.
Is he, I was going to say, he's second or third. He's definitely up there with fucking Gretzky and Gordy, though.
Yeah, he's right there. He passed Gordy for goals, I believe, but didn't. I don't know if he got there for points.
Still a remarkable feat. The guy, and what, he missed 4 or 5 years when he went back to the KHL after, was that after the lockout?
Well, if you count all the lockouts, he missed two complete seasons because of lockouts, basically, and he had two shortened seasons because of lockouts. So there's 4 seasons right there, and then 3 seasons in Russia. So really, it's like 6-7 years worth of his career. So yeah, he would have, if you really crunch the numbers, he would have really, I mean, it would have been close because Gretzky's numbers are so ridiculous, but he would have gotten in the ballpark, whereas, you know, no other player since Gretzky can get to that ballpark. That's just Gretzky's ballpark.
Because you can,
so
I mean,
that's why it's so impressive.
It really is impressive because if you think about it, 6 or 7 years and some of those, I mean, some of the later lockouts or, you know, whatever, but really his prime years, I mean, he won at Art Ross as late as 2001. So, I mean, dude was still gripping and ripping into the early 2000s.
Well, when he left the Rangers in, what was it? I guess it would be 08. He was the Rangers' best player. And that Rangers team made a lot of runs, and it was because of him. I mean, he won a scoring trophy, a scoring race at Ross. I believe it was in 07 or 08. I mean, yeah, the guy, I don't know. I think that he just loved playing hockey, and I think that unlike a lot of kids in North America, I think that at a certain point, it didn't matter if it was in the NHL for him. And I think that'll be the way it is the rest of his career. I think he'll keep playing. See him in Europe.
Yeah.
Maybe the Dell. He's not going to quit. He just loves playing. Like, he's just not going to ever stop playing hockey.
I think at this point, too, I'm not sure if he knows what else to do.
How could you? I mean, you're in your early 40s. You've done the same things since you were 13. I mean, it's hard to imagine.
And basically at a professional level, too. Like you said, he was working out like a goddamn madman at 13.
Yeah, and I believe, I'd have to look into this, I think he was playing pro or at least semi-pro at the age of 16, 17. So yeah, literally, a pro pretty much his whole life for the Klondo team. For me, it was like, I hope he does a Mike Fisher type thing. Fisher didn't do anything all season, then he signs to come for the playoff run. I would love to see Yager do that somewhere, maybe next year. Because, you know, if he gets limited minutes, he can add to the team. Any team that wants to roll 4 lines, though, you get in trouble having him because his legs just aren't there to play a consistent shift.
Right.
But
And that's why I bring up the Pittsburgh thing.
I do think something like that could happen.
Yeah, that's why I bring up the Pittsburgh Penguins, because it's like, man, I mean, you've seen them all year. They stayed the course, and now they're basically butt-fucking the competition. They are scary. Something happens to Matt Murray when that fucking playoff starts, and he's like a fucking, like, he hulks up, but turns into a goddamn monster.
Yeah, his, how calm he is and all that, it's great. It's just that it's so, I love Yager, and I would love for that storybook to happen, but just the way that Sullivan runs that team, and everybody's got a forecheck, everybody's got a back check, everybody's got to be able to skate. It's just not a fit for Yags. I would love to see it, but I just don't ever think that will be a fit for immediate future. Maybe when Yager turns 50.
Well, I thought, too, this year when he signed with Calgary, I was like, man, that's not a bad move. I thought Calgary was, you know, going to make a more of a push for the playoffs this year than they did. And I would have liked to seen him get in there with them, too. But they kind of, you know, took a turd on themselves there midseason.
Yeah, I think that once they realized the playoffs were a long shot, it came about building for the future. And, you know, it stinks that, they waived him, right? And ended up just, you know, out of the league.
And that was part of the weirdness.
It's so bizarre.
It was so weird. Like, Yager just gets waived and now he's done. And it didn't seem fit.
I'm surprised that the Rangers haven't, you know, already jumped at him. I know they can't because the playoffs are still going on, but the Rangers are going to be terrible for like 2 or 3 years. they need to sell jerseys. That's the bottom line. And he played there for a while, and that's the kind of fit where he fits. Like he probably wants to go somewhere where he can win a cup, but the reality of it is he needs to go to a basement-dwelling team if he wants to play.
Right.
Because a cup-contending team is just not going to find room for him on the roster. I mean, look at all the teams that made the playoffs this year. It'd be tough to find a place to slot him in and not slow that team down. I mean, you might get an extra goal here or there, but the game is just increasingly faster and faster and faster and faster. I mean, look at, you know, Matthews and Nylander and Marner. It's like the new legs are so much faster that that Yags gets he gets caught behind a little bit.
And I could have seen Vegas too at a point, but they kind of had to keep him out of there too because
how fast they are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and he would have lost his house.
And yeah, he would have definitely probably gambled his legs away. So.
Yeah. No. You're right. I actually thought Vegas would be a cute choice for him because again, a guy that can sell a lot of jerseys,
right,
and be a fan guy. But you know, Vegas is its own. Yeah, I haven't even had to judge them yet.
Yeah, then it turns out they don't fucking need him at all to sell jerseys.
No, they don't need anybody.
No, they're just... it's got to be an...
Fleury got hurt and Subban steps up. I mean, like, it was just like...
Malcolm Subban.
They need, they're fine without sometimes.
Oh, man. If you had told me Malcolm Subban would have won as many games as he did this year in the NHL, I probably would have spit in your face. There's no way.
Did he win a game before this year? I mean, I know he had a bunch of appearances, but he looked terrible. I don't know if he had an NHL win before this year.
No, he was awful. I don't know if he had stopped a puck yet.
No, I remember watching those and kind of rooting for him. I was there when he was drafted in Pittsburgh, and PK was there, and I was like, oh, that's a neat moment. He's going to the Bruins. His brother plays in Montreal. And then I remember kind of excited to see him play, and he was a fifth.
Yeah, you know.
It was pretty rough.
It really was, man. Well, I got five moments that stick out for me in Jágr's history. I'm going to bounce them off you, and then maybe cool. If you got some moments for me. Well, I don't know. If you're not familiar with Andy's background, you're a Pittsburgh kid, born and raised, right?
I was born in Pittsburgh, and I moved to Jersey around like 10 or 11.
Jesus Christ, dude. Jersey? Yeah,
I know. It made me hate the Devils and the Rangers more than you could imagine.
But, I mean, so you were prime time kid when Jaromír Jágr was coming in fucking full-blown flow, driving his car around Pittsburgh, listening to Metallica, like... When he was gone.
Well, actually, he was not allowed to drive his car for a lot of times. He was in Pittsburgh because he had so many driving infractions. Peter Nedved used to drive him to games to practice. They were like buddies. Yeah, he used to get pulled over constantly. He lost his license a couple times, I believe.
I was watching some video of him yesterday, and it was him early 90s with some guy interviewing him in the car, and he's like, you know, how fast is your car going? Like, without... He's like 120 miles an hour. And he's like, well, you answered that quick, dude. And he's like, yeah, I just drive around, you know.
No, he's always been an opulent guy, which is kind of why I like him. I mean, when he moved to New York and played for the Rangers, he lived in Trump Tower. He does everything as opulent as he can. And that's why he's got to keep playing hockey the rest of his life. I think our bank accounts might have more money in them right now than his.
And one thing you can say about the guy, I mean, I don't know many people that don't like him. And even as like Ohio fans, we didn't have a team when we were younger. So like, there was a lot of just Jágr fans in my part of the state. And he was like, it was like Michael Jordan and fucking Jaromír Jágr. Cause he was a younger dude. He had that flow, and there was just something about him where, like, he has that, you know, that what they call that on, like, fucking American Idol or whatever, like, the X Factor or whatever. Jágr had it, man. He was a fucking character.
I mean, yeah, he was a hard guy to not like, and I think that once he started spreading around the league where he was playing, he got even more well-liked because teams that didn't like him had to start to like him. I mean, years for the Rangers, they all started to love him, and then he goes to Philly, and while he's on Philly, they beat the Penguins in the playoffs for the only time in the past, like, 15, 20 years. So he's done a lot of likable things in cities where he wasn't liked, and so he spread around a bit, which I think ripped his legs.
Right. All right, man. Coming in at number five for me, I've got when Jaromír Jágr was in Boston. It was during a hockey night in Canada. They're asking the Boston players, you know, who's your favorite player growing up? They get to Jágr. One, his face and his fucking facial hair alone, and that is, I'm just like, God, dude, that's, you're my hero. Thank you. Thank you for even looking like that. And they go, you know, who's your favorite player growing up? And he just looks at the camera and just says, Jaromír Jágr. And I'm like, oh, man, that's like the best answer of all time.
Yeah, he was like, for whatever reason, NHL players now aren't allowed to be cocky.
Yeah, what is that?
But he was allowed to be, and it was okay. You know what I mean? It's weird.
It is weird. I was thinking about that, too. The last couple of days, I've just been watching a lot of Jaromír Jágr, like, interviews and just him being him. And I'm like, I don't know if the league is telling these guys not or, like, to play down your personalities or if, like, that's just a choice they've made from living in buses and playing hockey their whole lives that they don't actually have a personality. But it makes me sad that he might be one of those last guys where, like, you know, he might be fucking around in the locker room or, you know, telling Brizgalov to not eat lunch with him and just things like that. Like, just simple things that showed he was a human and, like, was kind of a prick but in a lovable way.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I think that with hockey, a lot of these guys are quieter guys, especially the Canadian guys who are hysterical when all the doors are shut and no cameras are on. But, I mean, you know, I don't think we get to see a real good glimpse of these guys' sense of humor that much anymore. Because, I don't know, I mean, the NHL is about as good as showcasing a player, you know, as the MLS is. But that's the NHL.
Yeah.
If it wasn't Crosby or Ovechkin, did you hear their name the past 10 years? It's, like, ridiculous.
What's a moment you have in your history with Jágr that is one of your favorites?
I mean, besides the playing moments, I mean, the first time I saw him was the NHL used to have 84 games a year for a couple of years. They played two neutral site games. Each team had a home and away at a neutral site. And so there's my first Penguins game ever was actually in Cleveland, Ohio.
Fuck yeah!
Real little kid. Yep, it was like 1993. And my dad was doing a lot of business in Cleveland. We were living right on the line of demarcation, like near Youngstown, basically.
Okay.
Between Ohio and Pennsylvania, or Pittsburgh and Cleveland, if you will. And so we went to that game first. I actually went to see them play in the Richmond Coliseum before I saw them play in the Igloo.
Damn.
And I remember just his hair flowing in warm-ups. Like, I was totally mesmerized by him and Lemieux. I don't remember anything about that game. You know, I was like seven or whatever it was.
Right.
I don't remember anything about that game. It was 93. Nothing. Besides, like, Jágr's hair bouncing around is such a clear memory during warm-ups. Like, I just thought he looked so cool.
Well, that's so it's crazy.
My first memory of seeing him in person, you know, that was, like, so earth-rattling to me to see him and Mario in person, you know, go down, stand by the glass, see them shoot around.
And that's the kind of shit that'll stick with a kid, too, like, because, one, you're like, holy shit, I'm at an event, you know, that's your first thing, but then you go, oh, look at that dude, he looks different, he's playing different, he was like a rock star on the fucking ice, man, he really was, yeah. And he broke, you know, Gretzky broke down all the walls being as good as he was, but Jágr crossed over lines that most athletes don't because of... I mean, how he looked, as petty as that is, his looks got him into different crowds because of, he was different.
Hey, does Chris Letang make $7 million a year if he's ugly? I don't know. I think he doesn't. But anyway, what do you call it? Yeah, Jágr just had that. And he also was, you know, the... You know, before him, the only other power forward winger of note that was, you know, an amazing, you know, greatest of all time was literally Gordie Howe. And he came in and kind of changed position. I mean, he was so strong, so hard to get off the puck. He would just cut to the middle of the ice with the puck at top of the circles. No one could stop him. He was just so strong. I think that before, when him and Lindros came in around that same era, it was when it kind of changed things. It was like, all right, you want to be a skinny dude and play in this league? You're not going to. You got to hit the weight room.
Dude,
because the Lemieux and Gretzky era, they were all bean pods. They all looked like boy band members. They had nothing to them. But then Jágr, Lindros come in, and it's like all of a sudden it's like you better have some meat on you if you're going to go in the corners all the time.
And Jágr stayed jacked, man. He was 45 and, you know, jacked to the gills just from like waking up and touching his toes 900 times when he wakes up in the morning. Just like a natural, like,
yeah, he has all these. Yeah, he has all these weird exercises where he does like squats without the bar, but he'll do like 1,000 of them a day.
Yeah,
yeah, to keep his legs just huge, and that's the other thing that like it's a weird thing to notice about him, but his legs look inhuman. It looks like they're uncomfortable. Like, I don't even know how he buys pants.
You don't see him wearing pants very often.
His legs are monstrous. I think he'd have to special order them. I mean, the guy has thighs and like, and hammies are just, they're just huge from years of, you know, I mean, basically being the strongest player on his feet in the game. And I mean, he might still be one of the strongest players on his feet who plays hockey right now.
The way he played,
a little bit slower.
Yeah, the way he played too, it seems like the league just caught up to him now, but he's so old now that it doesn't. The way he was playing, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's the other amazing thing is that he put up all his numbers during clutch and grab. He didn't put up his numbers in mid to late 80s when, you know, you could, every game was 9-7. You know, and he didn't put up his numbers after the lockout, which is, again, another time when numbers started to get high, not nearly as high as they were in the 80s. So he was stuck in the 90s for most of his prime. And so, yeah, with all the lockouts plus clutch and grab era hockey, to end with this many points, I think it's asinine to not put him in. To me, it's Howe, Lemieux, not any order here, Howe, Lemieux, Gretzky, and Orr, and then everybody else. And I really think you throw Jágr into that, too. You go those five, and then everybody else. And Mark Messier is right there. Maybe Mark Messier, too. But you can only make Mount Rushmore so big.
I'm not putting Messier in the same category with Jágr and Howe. I don't know why.
You know what?
I don't know why.
If he only won, like, 3 or 4 cups, you don't. The fact that he won one without Gretzky, and the fact he won one without Gretzky and Edmonton.
It's a good point.
And then he won... And then he won in New York, the seemingly impossible place to win, and the guarantee. And then you look at the career numbers. I don't think he was the fifth or sixth most skilled player ever to play. But as far as greatness, I think Messier is up there just because he's kept winning.
That's a great distinction there, too. I mean, he's a phenomenal winner. And like you said, winning without Gretzky and then going to New York and saving that city.
I mean, that's probably going to be their only cup in hundreds of years when we'll look back at
it. Oh, for sure. And I think about, like, one of my buddies growing up, his dad was from New Jersey. He was a Rangers fan. And he's like the godfather of Belleville, Ohio hockey, because that's before him, like, nobody played here. But when he moved here, his dad was such a big hockey fan that if you went over to his house, you know, he had sticks in the garage. He'd fucking sit you down, tell you about the cup in 1994, be like, listen, boys, you fucking queers don't know anything. Listen to this, how this happened. And it was really infectious. And I was like, man, this guy's fucking sweet. Hockey's fucking... And that's what really got this whole community started, was that. So I always call him Chuck Steelman. Shout out to your dad, man. The godfather of hockey here.
I mean, isn't it crazy? I mean, I played youth hockey in Ohio for a little bit. I played at Kent State for the Tri-County Flames. We lived over there. And it's amazing the state of hockey, how it's grown in Ohio and Pennsylvania. And these kids are now, these high school kids are competitive with the East Coast kids and the Midwest, and, like, you know, the thick Midwest, Minnesota-y type kid. So it's crazy how much...
The rest
you know,
of the...
The Cleveland area, because I don't really know much about other areas, but the Cleveland and Pittsburgh areas have really produced some good hockey players now.
Well, I think the rest of the country should take mine, too, because now that these kids are starting to grow up with it, I mean, these areas have always bred really good athletes, so as soon as these kids start playing more hockey, like you had mentioned, you're going to see some really elite athletes coming out of the, you know, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, yeah. Columbus area. It's just inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, the more the sport grows and the more that you don't need a pond to play it, the more ice time pops up, the more rinks that are built. It's always it's been a slow build, but I remember when I was a kid, it was, you know, there were like 10 rinks in Ohio, and now, you know, I'm sure there's 10, you know, in Cleveland.
Right, exactly. There was no dreams of playing, like, organized games. It was always just pond hockey. Like, oh, it's cold outside, let's go play. Now the kids in my area have a chance to, you know, not play at the high school they're at, but at least, you know, go play club hockey, like, relatively close, which is phenomenal.
And that's how it works. Once everybody starts playing club, their wealthy parents want the high school team to have a team. It's a slow build-up, but that's the way it works.
Fucking A, man. Another moment where he didn't thrive very well, but it was huge for his country and for him. The 1998 gold medal team, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the first year that the NHL played in the Olympics.
Was it 98 or was it? Yeah, because it was certainly not before. Yeah, that's right. Nagano, 98, right? Yeah.
Yes. And all the talk was America, Canada, obviously, blah. You know, they have the best, all this and that. And yeah.
Did America even win a game? Did the U.S. win a game? Remember they trashed their hotel room?
Yeah.
Chuck and Jeremy Roenick.
Yeah.
They lost so bad.
Classic Roenick, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, he's a total leader on that team. I think, you know, and I can have this conversation all the time. And I really believe it. I think the gold medal is much more important to European players than the Stanley Cup in a lot of aspects, because they grew up idolizing, you know, the Olympics. They grew up not really being able to see the NHL. Players nowadays, they could have with computers and stuff. But as far as a player like Jágr or even Ovechkin,
yeah,
that's why I felt bad for Ovechkin not being able to go back.
I felt terrible for that guy this year, man. I felt terrible for him, and you could you could tell he really wanted to go.
He can't say it, and because it would piss off Capital fans, because he makes $10 million a year to try and win them a cup. The fact is, for a Russian kid, and I know the same is true for Malkin, there's nothing more important than the gold medal for your country. I mean, that is what they grow up wanting to win. The NHL is this boutique league they want to play in and make money. What you really dream about, you know, we all dream about growing up scoring that clinching goal in Game 7. They dream about, you know, scoring the clinching goal in the gold medal game.
Yeah. And
there is like a cultural thing where in North America, all the players would much rather have a cup. But in Europe, I think these guys, just by nature of the way they grew up, they would rather have the gold medal. And I think it stinks that we're not going to see them chase anymore.
And then it's got to suck even more for Malkin and Ovechkin and Bravosky and, you know, all those Russian guys that watch their fellow countrymen win that gold medal.
Yeah, but I think they're also realizing that they you know, Canada's able to send their big boys too, and, you know, probably get another Canada gold medal.
It would have been fucking sweet, though. Especially, like...
No, it would have been fun. It's always been fun. I think it was a great experiment. It's sorry to see it end, but the NHL did it to expand, and as much as Batman is a SOB, he really has grown the league, and then when he's done using something, he tosses it aside.
Yeah,
you know, revenue's gone up from you know, I think it was like $600 million, you know, for the entire league when Bettman came in, and now it's like I think it's $1 billion to $2 billion. So he's really brought more money into the league. So
I mean, look what he did with the NBA,
and it's one of Gary's things.
Yeah, he's done it before, and then
he just took the NBA playbook. He's like, let's get in every big market and see what happens.
Well, he worked for the NBA before he came to the NHL.
Oh yeah, is it David Stern, Daniel Stern? I don't remember.
David Stern.
He was his right hand man. He was the assistant commissioner.
Yeah, and so he took that, and I mean, he's doing it. It just You know, but whatever. Fuck it. There's nothing we can do about it.
No. Well, the thing is, and as a Penguins fan, I have to have a soft spot for him. I mean, he just wouldn't let the team leave, even when there was legal sales letting Jim Basile take the team to Hamilton.
Right.
He didn't want to lose that TV market because he's such a nuts and bolts numbers guy. And the TV market in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh has to have a hockey team.
About 2.5 million people live in the metro area.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's Pittsburgh's so small that like numbers wise, you think, wow, they have three pro sports teams. That's kind of crazy. But the reason why is it's so sports obsessed that the local TV markets do so well. Every bar has the games on. Every household has them on.
If anyone asks that, they've never been there. Because if you go to Pittsburgh, you'll fucking get it real quick.
Yeah, that's all there is.
That's it. There's heavy metal, fucking fist fights in the streets, and sports on every fucking TV.
I don't miss the South Side, I'll tell you that. Gross.
The only part my band played there a few times, and I don't know what fucking part it was. Is by some hills, and I think it was by Pitt University, Pittsburgh. And it was like opening weekend for kids to be there, and it was a fucking it was a madhouse, dude.
Yeah, no, I know. They used to have a comedy festival during that weekend, and it was terrible.
I think the name of the club we played was like the Moosehead or some shit like that, or the Moose.
Oh, you played at the Smiling Moose.
Yes, sir. That's exactly it. What part is that?
That's the South Side, but that's not that far deep into the South Side. There's one block down. Has about 170 bars.
It was pure fucking anarchy.
Right there where you play. But you were at the very top of it. Yeah, it's become a college kid playground. If you're like 24, you're like way too old to be walking around there.
Dude, there was dudes fighting cops on the streets. It was fucking insane.
Oh, yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah. No, yeah, there's a complete... I mean, I love Pittsburgh, but I've been out in a lot of major cities and a lot of very aggressive areas, and I've never been to a place where you got to be more ready for a fight than the South Side of Pittsburgh.
It was the most fist fight ready place I'd ever been. for sure.
It's too much for me. I go there on a need to go basis, but I perform at the Moose a bunch too. That's a good performance venue.
Yeah, it was a fun time, man. All right, buddy. 2008 to 2011. Jágr plays for the Philadelphia Flyers. What the fuck?
I mean, I never booed Jágr when he came back to the Igloo until then. I did boo him when he touched the puck. And it wasn't like a hatred boo. It was just like first of all, he was saying for months that he was talking to Ted Holland. It looked like he was going to be a Red Wing.
Yeah,
and I think he took the same money to go to Philly, just because that's Jágr. I think he wanted to go to Philly with a smile on his face and kind of mess with people. Like, he's not malicious, but I think he got the idea planted that this could be something that annoys people, and I think that that's what he wanted to do. But I can't say I was mad at him because I don't know the guy, but I just felt like
I was mad at him.
You know. I just felt like his legacy was already hurt enough in Pittsburgh, and then for him to be on the only Philadelphia Flyer team that beat the Penguins in the playoffs, since 97, I mean, it leaves a little bit of a stain, and I don't know, like I said, I think his jersey gets retired, but it's little things like that that I think pushed Mario, and already not, you know, a guy who already wasn't thrilled with him to begin with.
See, I don't
all
think
the little, all the little things he said and all the, you know, the famous quote of, you know, why do you want out of Pittsburgh? Because I'm dying alive here.
That's was never afraid to say he didn't like Pittsburgh very much, wasn't he?
No, he really wasn't. And the thing is that, you know, being somebody who's lived most of my life in the New York area and Pittsburgh area, and now I'm in L.A., it is infectious to be in a big city, and I can't imagine if you're an athlete or you're making a lot of money, because it's almost like, what's the point?
Yeah,
where am I going to spend this? So I think Jágr is always addicted to the glitz and glam, and he you know I really think that there's a chance that if Winnipeg tries to sign him over the summer, he says no. But if you know, the Panthers can get him back to Miami, or the Rangers can get him back to New York, or maybe the Kings want to, you know, mess around, rebuild a little bit, bring him to LA. He likes big markets. He likes to have fun.
It's going to have to be one of those big market teams to get him. It's going to have to be.
It's going to have to be one of those big markets that are in a bit of a rebuild. Because like I said, I don't think if you're – Jágr is not part of your future plans, obviously, no matter what team you are. So you want to have him come in for next year, score his 15 to 20, and sell some jerseys. I think that could happen. But again, if I were him, I'd do the Mike Fisher move. I pretend like I don't want to play at all. And then halfway through the season, start skating and being like, hey, guys, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. I think you're right when you say, you know, if he's going to be back, you're going to see him in a Ranger sweater. I think that makes perfect sense. For both parties. Like
that's the only one that makes sense to me. It's the only one where I could realistically guess, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a huge market. I mean, obviously, it's New York City, and he will sell a shit ton of jerseys because that's what he does. And what's it going to hurt your
fucking... And he's already beloved there.
Yeah, they already love him. Why not?
Yeah.
So, no, yeah.
And it's not going to hurt that team next year. And poor Henrik Lundqvist, he needs a buddy to hang out with. Because, man, is that sad. Everyone talks about Ovechkin not getting a cup yet. Lundqvist deserves one, too. And he couldn't be further away at the moment.
And he's had more of a taste of it, too. Ovechkin, you know, hasn't sniffed it as much as Hank has.
Yeah, I mean, Hank's been out of the second round at least three or four times, and Ovi hasn't even once. So
if you're Hank now, you're probably going fuck me.
Well, I can't believe that. From what I've heard, the plans are to keep him and that he's staying and he's happy. But no way,
makes no sense.
He's got to be miserable. He loves New York. There's a New Yorker thing where you never want to leave. I never got it.
Me either.
Certain people get it.
No.
I think Hank might have that too. So I think he might not want to leave, but he's not going to win.
We've played there a few times on tour, and after like a couple hours of being there, I'm like, okay, I've seen it. Let's get the fuck out of here. This is insane. It's too much.
I lived there for 2 years, and I lived in Jersey City for a bunch of years, and I just got over it.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too many humans for me. It's just too many fucking.
It's just a pain in the ass to go.
Yeah,
grocery shopping is really hard. Going to like Staples to get supplies is really hard. Nothing's easy because you got to carry it everywhere.
So we were driving a 16-foot van with a trailer, trying to like park in fucking Brooklyn. Like it's a fucking nightmare. It's a fucking nightmare. Hit me up with your favorite Jágr moments, Andy. What's your favorite Jágr goal?
You cut out for a second there. What'd you say? I'm sorry.
I said, hit me up with one of your favorite Jágr moments.
It has to be one that I don't even know if I saw live because I've seen the replay so many times. As a little kid, that goal versus Chicago in 92 to kind of ice that series. Really, any of the stick work ones.
Yes.
You know, Crosby's done a lot of batting out of the air. That was one of Jágr's favorite things to do. Really, just again, patented coming through the center of the circles. I mean, to me, I think maybe the goals that meant the most to me as a kid is when he tied it and then won it in overtime versus the Devils. And, geez, what was that? I think it was like 99. I don't know. It was in the middle of the Devils' runs, and the Devils were supposed to win another cup. And Jágr sent it back to Pittsburgh in overtime, and the Penguins ended up winning that series just because I was living in Jersey at the time.
So. Stick it to them.
Yeah, and just because like, it was that thing where, you know, he's not thought of this way because he hasn't made it deep in the playoffs a lot, but Jágr was always very clutch.
Yes.
Always very clutch. Played big in big games, was never a guy who disappeared. And again, that's why he was such a big player internationally. Really, really played big when he needed to. He never ghosted. He never really went away. I mean, some games he'd be off, but you still noticed them.
See, I was having a conversation with my brothers about this very thing yesterday. You know, when you talk about, like, we're talking about Yager gambling, whatever you think about it. I was like, you know, I think guys like him and Michael Jordan literally were thought so highly of themselves that they thought they couldn't lose even gambling on odds. Like, they thought they were that good that they would just win that too. And I was like, man, Michael Jordan got his dad killed doing that shit, and Yager was like almost $1 million in debt at one point or something like that. But I was like,
he owed like a few different casinos in Atlantic City, and he was in debt. Yeah,
and I think it was their mentality was like, oh, I never fucking lose. I'm a champion, and it got the best of them. And sometimes,
I think it's just the competitiveness. Yeah, too. It's like they always got to be doing something where they can win. And like I said, Yager had such a love for the glitzy, you know, Ritz-Carlton lifestyle that if he could triple his money every once in a while, that still probably wasn't enough for him. He likes his money.
Was the is the town he's from in the Czech just like a small farming town?
Klondo, Czech Republic. It really not much to it. Farming and hockey, and I think it's pretty. I think the time that Yager grew up, it was pretty secluded. I think now it's more of a modern place. Everybody loves Czechoslovakia now. It's like the place to go to party if you're a college kid. Or Czech Republic. I really don't know much about it. I mean, I know that, he grew up on a farm, but I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Is that where he owns the team now?
I don't believe so. That I know he does own a team. I know that his father was heavily invested in a few of the Russian teams for the KHL. But I'm not sure. I don't think Yager could have invested in them. He played over there.
But
he's got his money. You know, I'm sure he's got a money manager telling him to keep it spread out, not bring it all to the Borgata.
My number two moment of my Yager moments, Yager peanut butter. Did you ever get it?
Oh, jeez, of course.
Did you eat it?
I'm sure I have an empty jar of it somewhere in my memorabilia boxes.
Why? Why was there? Why was it made? Just like a money grab?
Well, I mean, you've certainly seen giant eagles driving through the Pittsburgh area before, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, giant eagle will take any athlete in Pittsburgh and then give them a product. And the thing that was so unique about Yager, I mean, they had, Bettis had a whole line of hot dogs and mustard.
Fuck yeah.
They had Big Ben beef jerky. There's always been stuff like that.
No, I remember
Yager. It was so unique because Yager actually used peanut butter to rub on his groin when he was having groin issues, and he swore that it worked, and it was this magic.
No way.
That's where it comes from. And after that news article came out, Giant Eagle, or Giant Eagle, as people from Pittsburgh say,
Eagle,
started releasing those, and they started releasing Casparitis Crunchers. They're pickles.
Are you fucking serious?
I swear to God. Yes, it was. That's sort of a whole. But the only thing that was really popular was the Yammer Yager peanut butter. And again, it's the absurdity of the fact that he did rub peanut butter on his groin when he had a lot of pulled and strained groin problems in the late 90s. You know, the only time the guy really did not have much injury problems besides that stretch.
Yeah.
And he swore that it works. He swore that, and there's no evidence to it.
No, fuck no, there's not. I've never heard that before.
You're so distracted by how sticky your groin is that you don't remember that it hurts. I don't know. Mind over matter, I guess.
Or it was all the fucking. That's how that came about. It was probably all the fucking whores he had licking it off of him that made him feel better. That's what I.
But just a totally bizarre, not quite. Never quite, made sense in a lot of ways, Yammer Yager, but he loves the partying culture here and being weird. So part of me thinks he rubbed the peanut butter on his crotch just to be weird.
That's what I'm thinking, man.
No, he definitely loved weirding out his teammates and the media and the fans. He was always kind of trying to goof around. So Like, who knows with him? He's a mystery.
Yeah, I could totally be him be like, oh, we do it in the check. Like, and you couldn't question him because no one knows what the fuck they do over there. So he's like, oh, I just dress up like Santa Claus all the time and rub peanut butter on my fucking crotch, man.
Yeah. No, and then and like I said, he was just such an oddball. And everybody knew that about him. Sometimes you see him on the bench and you're like, oh my God, did he get hurt? But he wore this necklace, and when the necklace would break, he would freak out.
Oh, yeah.
He'd have to, like, find all the pieces and shit on the ice.
I know.
He was always an eccentric.
Later on, he changed to, like, those braided necklaces that wouldn't break, but he was rocking the gold chains there early on.
Well, the league said no more.
Oh.
I think he was a big part of it. The league was like, that's it. Nah. No more chains that are exposed over your jersey and your neck. He did switch up. He's always had all those twist ties on his wrists. He looked like he's going to a concert.
Yeah, one of my favorite bench memories of his is, I don't know if it was the Olympic or World Cup or if it was just the international ice hockey tournament, but when that trainer's rubbing him down.
Did they win the World Cup?
They for sure won a World Cup, I thought.
Yeah, probably. I don't. You know what? I'm such a non into the World Cup guy. I don't remember who won the last World Cup, and it just happened. Was it Canada?
Yeah.
I'll just always guess Canada.
Yeah, it was Canada. That Canada last World Cup team, like Marchand, decided to be good at hockey that tournament.
Man, it's a pain in the ass, but he can play.
Holy shit! How many World Cups have there even been, though? I mean, what, 96 is the first one?
Yeah, and that was like the special one where Richter, you know, stood on his head and the U.S. won.
Yeah, and Tkachuk was a bad motherfucker in that tournament.
Yeah, yeah. Roenick, Chelios, Hatcher, a lot of classic names on that team. Leach.
Yes.
I just never, you know, I like the NHL, you know what I mean? I've never been somebody who would prefer to see these guys on bigger surfaces. First of all, I think it makes for a more boring game because they can play keep away. Somebody gets a 2-goal lead and it becomes soccer.
Yeah.
I just have never been a huge fan of international play, which is why it doesn't break my heart personally that the NHL players aren't going to the Olympics anymore. Because, you know, while it was fun to watch, I just was so scared of somebody getting hurt from the Penguins that it was nerve-wracking.
What I would like is, if they're going to say it's an amateur tournament, then don't send guys from the AHL. Actually send amateur hockey players. Like, don't... Then if you're going to take that card, then send young kids to go play then.
Yeah, then say if you've been paid to play, you can't do it.
Yeah, that makes you a professional.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. And then it's also, like, technically, like, the major junior kids would be considered professionals in Canada because don't make they don't make money, but they make a living. They make enough money to, you know, eat and have a house.
Yeah, would they get the billet team? Yeah. So yeah, then Canada goes. Yeah. You know, kick rocks Canada. Though none of the junior kids can play, and then all the college kids can play because they don't get paid to do that shit.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's certainly. It's weird. I mean, to see AHL scrubs. I mean, look. Didn't Ryan Malone make the USA team? Like, it's like, come on.
It was
the best hockey players we can offer. I didn't want, I'll be dead honest, I didn't watch a second of it. Without the NHL players in it, I lost all. I love the World Junior Tournament. To me, that's the tournament.
Oh my God, that has become the tournament.
It's
besides,
so much better, so much faster. That's the tournament.
It really is. It's better.
I'd
than
rather watch tomorrow.
Yeah, it's
stars.
Yeah, it's better than college hockey. It's better than, you know, the Olympics, because those kids want that fucking medal bad.
Yeah, they're 16, 17 years old, and they're playing for the medal for their country, and it's just a, you know, the level of hockey is just incredible. I mean, you know, I would much rather see, like I said, these young kids than, you know, these retired NHL, AHL players. I mean, they're much better, much faster, and they're the future of the way the game looks, not this old, clunky guys. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Is that the fact that I was just so scared that Sidney was going to take a huge hit, and we were going to have to lose him halfway through a season for just for
nothing.
So he'd try and win a gold necklace.
My number one Jager is just the character, man. And I've got a list of things. I'm just going to say them, bounce them off you, see what you got to say about them. Did you ever see him dress up as Santa Claus as much as he did?
I've seen pictures. I believe in his book, there's a picture of him dressed up as Santa. I
think it was sexual.
Well, there used to be this club in Pittsburgh called, I can't remember, but it was actually a floating, like, it was like a barge, but it had a nightclub on it.
Nice.
And that was his, like, if the Penguins had a day off or 2 or 3 days off, he was absolutely there. And that's where a lot of the craziness and shenanigans went down with the Jager. Can't remember the name of the place, but it's been gone for years. But he was known as sort of like, in a city with no nightlife, if the one guy with long hair who's a celebrity is out, everyone's going to notice him. So I'm pretty sure every night the Jager went out, he was noticed, no matter, and he was always doing something extravagant and weird. So I'm sure plenty of people saw it.
For sure. The other moment I was talking about is, I like to refer to as the blowjob, in that international tournament when that guy's like rubbing his legs down, he grabs the back of his head. And he's like, basically, me too in the guy. Do you remember that?
I do. And that was like one of those things where he was so strong, but he didn't like getting in shoving matches. So he would just, you know, either sit there and talk shit. Like, what are you going to do? I'm 6'4". I'm shit house. You know what I mean? I don't even care if you're an enforcer. I'll tie you up.
Is he fucking 6'4"?
I believe he is. I know he's 6'3". I think he is 6'4". Yeah.
Holy shit.
He's huge. He's huge.
Holy
no,
shit.
No, Mario is 6'4". I believe Jager is 6'3".
Still, that's a big fucking guy.
He's huge. I mean, when you go to a game and you sit down low and you see Jager stand straight up, you're like, holy shit, he is really big. So, yeah, he was never really scared of anybody. So he was always putting his glove in people's faces and putting his stick in their crotch. And, you know, he was always... doing something unkempt.
Another one I think of is, I think it might have been the first time he was an unrestricted free agent or whatever. He has like a picture of him with a phone, and then this past year when he wasn't getting any phone calls, he took a new picture of himself with the phone. Like, no one's fucking called me. Like, that's just classic fucking character Jager. Like, just shit he didn't have to do, he'd take it to that next level.
Well, I think he enjoys being funny. He enjoys... I know him and Shanahan used to pal around way before they were both in the Rangers because they were both kind of like the... Like really, you know, ball-busting funny guys in the NHL were both stars at the same time. So I think that... I think he loves making his peers laugh and his buddies laugh. And I think that was more to make a lot of people in the league laugh than it was for any of us.
For sure, man. Another one is... probably would have been 5 years ago or so, you know, the as soon as like Instagram and all that shit's really taken off, that chick takes a picture of him passed out next to him and then like tries to blackmail him, and he's basically just like, I'm a single professional hockey player, like all you did was just make me look like a fucking badass because you're like some 25-year-old chick that I just railed last night.
I mean, it just shows the stupidity of people when they're around celebrities. Like, why did she think that was something he was going to be blackmailable? He doesn't have a family. He doesn't have 4 kids and a mortgage.
No.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't give a shit.
Like, it's one of those things where people, they think that everything's valuable because it was nearest.
When she
celebrities. Like, you just got a picture of a guy sleep.
Yeah,
I love that they said tell whoever you want. But yeah. I mean, that's why Jager's never gotten married.
Tell whoever you want. And she goes, oh,
he's always had a hot girlfriend, though.
Just shows that she had no idea who he was.
Yeah, he never goes anywhere without a hot girl.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I just love that, like, that chick had no idea who he was, or she wouldn't have posted it to be like, oh, I'm going to get this guy, when he was just like, yeah, for sure, post that.
She was 18. She's 18. She barely had an idea who he was. Like, when she was 12, this was the first time he left the NHL. So I think she's thinking, man, maybe, you know, I don't know. That was one of the stupidest moves. You know, it's unbelievable that she thought she had something valuable there. It's just the guy sleeping.
And then him and his drinking cat, man, and that just goes down to something weird that he does, isn't it? Like, he put a picture of, like, an empty bottle with the fucking...
Yeah. I've heard that his favorite pastime is sipping vodka slowly, like, all day.
Oh,
having
I'm
a
sure.
couple cigarettes, and... he likes to sip vodka slowly and have a few cigarettes and just relax. He's not a big party guy, but that's his favorite way to wind down.
Those guys over there, man, my older brother, when he was in Iraq, there was, you know, Russian soldiers there with them. And he said that they had cans of vodka, like six-pack of, like, pounders. And they would sip,
yeah.
they would sip on these lukewarm cans of vodka like beer, and that's like what they did, like that's what they drank, like that's how they operated. I'm like, that's they're a different kind of human.
Yeah, I think it's comes from growing up in the cold, and then first of all, growing up in some of these areas that didn't have much money, and the only booze they had was the vodka that the freaking town made. But yeah, he likes his vodka and his cigarettes, which is always blows people away. But Europeans also smoke cigarettes very sparingly. They'll have one or two.
Right.
Whereas most Americans will have a pack and a half.
Exactly.
And that's why we can't breathe or doing.
No, we always take everything to the fucking extreme.
Oh, to the nth degree. But yeah, him and Mario used to both smoke cigarettes. It was one of the best kept secrets in Pittsburgh.
Well, dude, that's what the Blue Jackets need to start doing, is smoking more fucking cigarettes, I guess.
Well, it was just their French players, you know, and they're out having a night, you know, they're not obviously Jager wasn't French, but they're out having a nice night, and having a cigarette at the end of the night is like part of it, you know.
Yeah, man. All right, buddy, 766 goals, 1,155 assists, total of 1,921 in points, 13-time All-Star, played for a handful of teams, two cups, loved by... I mean, all the hockey fans that I know, how can you sum up Jaromír Jágr's career?
I think you sum it up by saying that I think he, you know, I think it's not a stretch to say that he was the most physically dominant player that we've ever had. You know, I mean, Mario and Gretzky were all about the mind. Or was all about, you know, his ability to skate and puck handle. And Hal was like the other guy who was, you know, he was a problem to play against. He was physical. So I really think that Jágr was like the new Hal. I mean, maybe that's how I brand him.
I like that, man. And, you know, dude's
at the end
like...
of the day, was he was Gory Hal, whatever, 50 years, 40 years later, you know.
I like that, man. And, you know, you would say if... Lindros could have played longer, you know, he would be up in that conversation.
I mean, he wasn't tough like Gordy. He couldn't take a punch.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he definitely...
I'm not talking the toughness, really, because Gordy was, you know, you could hit him in the face with a tire iron, he'd be fine.
Right.
But it was more just the fact that, you know, Gordy Howe invented the power forward winger position, and, you know, just, you know, again, cutting off the boards and trying to stop a guy that strong. You can't do it. So that I think that's how I sum him up, is just the strength. It's just you couldn't get a stick on him. You couldn't throw him off the puck. Just the strongest player I've ever watched.
He was amazing. I think hockey's going to miss him, and I hope somebody comes around like him soon.
Yeah, so do I. But you know what? He's such a great impact. Ambassador, and like we said, he needs the money. It would be nice to see him all over NHL Network, all over NBC Sports for the next, you know, 20 years, hopefully. I think that'd be great.
I hope so, man. Andy, I can't thank you enough for coming on and helping me out with the episode, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, William. Appreciate it.
Of course, man. Tell everybody where they can find you, buddy.
Well, you can find me, if you wanted to see in general, where I'm traveling around to, it's andypcomedy.com. And then, me and Colin Chamberlain, we have the Unhealthy Scratch podcast, and that comes out, on Monday mornings and on Thursday mornings. So you know, and it's playoff time, so we're really getting into it now.
How long have you guys been doing two episodes?
We just started about halfway, maybe halfway through this year, because we started doing a topic episode, and listeners, as you know how nice and gentle listeners can be, let us know that they hated our topic episode, and they just wanted to do a second review later in the week. So really, the idea was, let's do a wrap-up every week and a topic every week, but now it's just become like two reviews, because they didn't like it.
Oh, shit, man. I guess I didn't even realize there was two a week. I mean, I listen, but I guess I just click play on whatever's on the top of my list of subscribed things and just let it ride.
Yeah, well, you know what? The Monday one, if I'm going to say, it's kind of like the more important, more in-depth one. The Thursday one is a little bit more of a wrap-up. And like I said, we wouldn't have even done it if our other idea didn't fail. And listeners send in like, hey, just do another quick wrap-up. And I'm like, all right, you're right.
Well, fuck yeah, man. And better luck to you guys in fantasy hockey next year.
Oh, dude, it was one of those years where I like took a week where I was on the road and didn't have access to my computer, and
oh, to bury you.
Saw that I was losing, and I was like, I hate this right now. I can't take it. But yeah, maybe next year.
Fuck yeah, man! Tell Colin I said hello. Be safe out there in LA, and keep me informed. I'll have you back on soon, man. I always appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely, and I'm always trying to make my way to Columbus. I love Columbus. It's a great town to do comedy, and so, you know, hopefully I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, for sure let me know, and definitely give me a heads up. I'll take the wife down there, we'll fucking come, I love stand-up. I think it's one of the most intriguing things I've ever seen. It blows my mind you guys can do that.
Yeah, it's just a way not to have a job, that's all it is.
All right, man, have a good day, man. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks, William.
All right, see you, buddy.
I'll talk to you.
All right, Biscuit Babies, there he was, Andy Picaro, my main man. Make sure to go check him out on Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. I think it's Andy P. Comedy. Really funny fucking guy. And go listen to his podcast, The Unhealthy Scratch Podcast, with him and Colin Chamberlain. It's very good. I love it. As always, we are brought to you by Lucid Float Spas out of Mount Vernon, Ohio. A float tank center, massage center, fix your fucking life center. Hey, today I had to drink a fucking Guinness Blonde and some kind of fucking tangerine beer. If you guys work for a brewery or know anybody that does, I'm looking to take on sponsorship for beer. This shit has to end. I need some fucking free beer, please. And we're always partnered up with ParkersPlatoon.org. Go there, get some CBD oil. Keep your eyes out for Parks and Cote's CBD brand coming out soon. Go there, donate, check out the website, help a veteran. Maybe go to the veteran center in your neighborhood and go play some fucking checkers or something. Quit being a prick. I love you guys. Please go rate and review us, iTunes, Spotify, all that bullshit, wherever the fuck you listen to podcasts. Obviously, you're listening to it now, so just leave a review. It only takes a second. It really helps the podcast grow. 5 stars. I fucking love it. That's all you have to put. And it really helps get this show to more people. And that's the idea of doing it. I love you guys. Be safe. Party on. Enjoy the playoffs. Good night. How many bucks do I give?